You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 8 April. We had Japanese current account data earlier this morning. Swings into a positive number. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Carmen Mepurwani. Markets, they were wild yesterday. They were totally wild. The bigger question is, should investors be looking outside of the US for offshore? Merrill Pick from Old Mutual Investment Group, our potential exclusion from AGOA, maybe not as bad as many think. Frank Leonette from GlowRep. We've got a grey listing update in June. Can we get off the list? There's two more things we still need to do. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. What's the endgame behind Trump's tariff wars? It's not blind revenge against the US trading partners. The endgame appears to be a new global financial order. Business Day, Rand 4 blamed on GNU threat of collapse. Local currency suffers its steepest weekly drop amongst emerging currencies. Morning markets. The US was mixed. The S&P down only 0.25% and the NASDAQ up 0.2%. The East is green. We've got Sydney 1.3% higher, Tokyo 6.1% up, Hong Kong 1.9% and Tencent up 1.33%. Commodities are mostly red. Gold futures $3,012 an ounce. Brent is green at $64.91, platinum 918, palladium 903, the rand is 1950, bitcoin 80,100. Top 40 opening call looking for about 625 points green. That is just over 0.8%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money, also available on podcast.
Taking up with Carmen Mepurwani, independent analyst. Carmen, appreciate the early morning time. A wild couple of days. Yesterday, markets were all over. We opened 5% down. We were 1.2% up before eventually ending red. US, equally so. Your take on it? I mean, I mentioned there one of the articles this morning talking around trying to reset global trade and the like. Would you be looking at America investment at this point and thinking maybe look elsewhere, or is it a case of, you know, this time it's different, but it never really is actually?
I think all your questions are valid. It is trying times. I think let's start with volatility.
Yeah.
If we look at the volatility index, which gives us an indication, obviously, of what the stock market's doing, in the US specifically as well, we're seeing that the volatility index has reached a level of about 50. Mm-hmm. As an indication, anything under 17 is generally considered normal. So 50 is way off the charts. This we haven't seen since COVID times, where again, there was just significant panic.
Yeah.
And the key here is the unknown, right? Yes, there's generally unknown, but when we have what they, I suppose what the media is calling a man-made crisis at the moment, it's, and we know how unpredictable it is at present. So that is the key and the concern at the moment. In terms of your question about the US, Simon, where are you going to go to?
Yeah, I mean, agreed.
Unfortunately, everything is, there's a ripple effect and everything is being impacted. You know, if there are talks about a trade war, there's going to be severe consequences for that. May see the global economy going into recession again. We're hearing talks from the Fed saying, you know, they're not quick, they're not so keen to drop the interest rates mm-hmm. as fast as expected. So it's going to be a harrowing time, I think. But as you say, go back to the fundamentals. I always say that is look where you believe now things are totally underpriced.
Mm-hmm.
What are the fundamentals? How does the current situation specifically in terms of the U.S. impact that? And if you're still seeing value in your model, then now is actually the best time to get into the stocks.
I take your point. I mean, there was some. I mean, Capitec yesterday, I think at one point was below 2,500. It closed well above that. It's looking at the individual stock. It's doing the bottom up and saying, you know, how's this going to impact the individuals? Because I agree with you. I mean, you know, I was pondering last night. Okay, so not the US. Where? Europe? That's going to be tough. Emerging markets? I don't know. It is just find the stocks you like, look for value, and truthfully, there is some out there.
No, there absolutely is. You have to be digging. Mm. You have to have done your work up to this point. But maybe the first starting point is, like you said, maybe not location. Maybe it's about the industry or the sector. Mm. Which sectors do you believe are going to thrive under this environment? And then you go and you drill down and look for those stocks that you believe are the ones that are going to be the superstars going forward. Because it isn't an overnight game. Yes, yeah. We know that Trump is there for another 3 and a bit years. Mm-hmm. But the point is that we're playing the long game. So if you're looking at 5 to 10 to 15 years, it's a totally different ball game.
Yeah, I like those 2 points. Firstly, our investment horizon is way longer than the rest of Trump's second term. And find sectors. There'll be sectors doing better than others. We'll leave it there. Comrade Maporandi, independent analyst. Always appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Meryl Peck, Head of Equity Research at Old Mutual Investment Group. Meryl, appreciate the early morning time. The African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, we've been on that list for over 20 years since it first came out. The US used to be our biggest trading partner. As I understand, it's still significant, but no longer our largest. And in fact, China is we're doing more trade with China these days than we are with the US anyway.
Absolutely, Simon. Good morning and good morning to the listeners. When the AGOA Act came into being in the year 2000, the US was the biggest trading partner, and this was true up until 2009. But subsequently, China has truly overtaken them, and by share of value, we now trade 2.5 times as much wow. with China as we do with the US. And actually only about 10% of our exports to the US fall under the AGOA Act. So I think it's attracting a lot of attention, the possibility of exclusion. It would be, I think, quite negative for sentiment, but the actual impact on trade and GDP today, 20 years later, is not as material as one might think.
I take your point on that. I hadn't, 10% of our exports, I hadn't realized China was so much more than the US. You were doing some numbers. I mean, you think 10% of total exports, potentially less than 0.1% of our GDP. Now, to be clear, we don't want to lose any GDP, but it's not as horror as many might think. And to your point, it's perhaps more sentiment than economic.
Yes. So our research looked at which aspects of our exports are actually falling under AGOA. Mm-hmm. So it's not that 10% of our exports go to the US, but of our total exports to the US, yep. only 10% of mm-hmm. that is actually covered and has exemptions under AGOA. So clearly the automotive industry is it's extremely material in that industry, in the citrus industry. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, South African GDP, the estimates by Brookings Institute and also Investec Research shows that on a 2% GDP, the impact is 0.1% or less, mm-hmm. Because there is a lot of trade that we do with the US that is actually not covered by AGOA.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, I mean, you know, ago 25 years of it, the talks around our potential exclusion predate Trump. They were happening in Washington last year, but in many senses, yeah. I mean, the 30% that we got slapped with last week. I mean, AGOA's. Yeah. I mean, how do I say that, in that it's almost become the side story. The bigger story is the tariff wars that have rolled out over the last couple of days.
100%. I think a week or two ago, or certainly last year, ago felt like a big story, and now it suddenly feels like a footnote compared to the tariffs. And you know, we have not been spared. Pretty much almost every country has been hit with these tariffs. And so on a relative scale, I mean, compared to China, our tariffs now are looking quite minimal.
Yeah.
And I think really this AGOA pattern has been, it's been, yes, South Africa was in the news last year. The Senate, even under the Biden administration, you know, there was bipartisan support within the Senate to re-look South Africa's AGOA status because of discomfort with our ties to Russia and then also rumored engagements with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So this preceded Trump. But if we actually look at AGOA and America's relationship with the continent as a whole, this program peaked in 2014 in terms of the number of African countries included. It peaked at 41 countries. We're now down to 32. And there've been some significant countries excluded over the last 5 years, such as Uganda and Ethiopia. It's accelerated since 2020. So, you know, it does just speak to this trend of the U.S. becoming more nationalist and focused on their own economic interests.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I want to change track slightly. It was harder to say than I thought. And look at particular stocks. I was talking to my previous guest, and she was saying absolutely some bottom up. The one that you mentioned in the note was Bidcorp, and decentralized, not doing very much in the U.S. Therefore, you know, if we go into recession, everyone gets hurt. But Bidcorp is perhaps a little less tariff. What's the word I'm looking for? A pain for them, perhaps.
Yes, that is certainly our view. If you just think thematically, globalization feels like it has peaked. The data shows that it's unwinding, and certainly tariffs and trade wars are going to accelerate that trend. So what is the inverse of that? It's a business that is quite localized. So just by design of the business model, they don't need to think about onshoring. Onshoring is the business because one of their taglines is, you know, basically global group, but local focus. I'm butchering that, sorry. but effectively, they are this global group. They've got global capital, and they've got a very small head office that allocates capital to opportunities. But the underlying businesses are run very independently by the local management teams on the ground, which makes sense because it's a food service business. It's got to cater to local tastes. The local networks and relationships matter. And so much of the supply chain is based on fresh produce.
Yeah.
You know? So you cannot really easily export and import too much of that. So, you know, they're actually just really well insulated from potential tariffs, relatively speaking. I'm sure there are items that they import, but a lot of it, because it's fresh, has to be locally sourced. And they have just always felt this is the best way to run the business, leave the local teams to run it as best as they think. They've got a very strong balance sheet. They've got acquisition opportunities and a track record of integrating acquisitions, but returning really good returns above cost of capital. And at this point in time, they're trading on a 1 year forward price to earnings ratio of 15.5 versus a historic average ratio of about 19. And there's no operations in the US. The main areas are Europe, UK, Australia. So with the inflation that is about to come to the US consumer, there's surely going to be pressure on household spending.
Yeah.
Perhaps a good time to just avoid the US consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like your point. I mean, Bidcorp is, they're global, but they're local. You're not flying lettuces around the world. We leave it there. Meryl Pick, Head of Equity Research at Ord Mutual Investment Group. Really appreciate the early morning insights. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Frank Leonette. He is CEO of GlobeRep. Frank, appreciate the time. It was 4 years ago, just a little over 4 years, that the Financial Action Task Force put us on a grey list. We have, as I understand, working hard to get off it. Next meeting is June. There's still a couple of points that we need to resolve ahead of that meeting. Is that correct?
Good morning, Simon. Yes, that is correct. I think South Africa has made significant progress in addressing the FATF's requirements. And, you know, those requirements were aimed at dealing with money laundering and terrorist financing specifically, amongst other things. But one of the obligations that they managed to accomplish is identifying beneficiary ownerships of companies. That was one of the criteria that all businesses had to abide by, and that would unravel the complexities of business structures, whether it be trusts, non-profit organizations, and, you know, complex businesses. We needed to find out who the owners were of those structures. And so that was implemented last year, and we've made strong progress towards that. And also, in addition, the regulators have demonstrated that they're not afraid to apply penalties and fines for non-compliance. I mean, over the last couple of years, we've seen large businesses and financial institutions being fined by the FSCA for failing to adequately implement the FIC's mandate on the FATF policies. So, yeah, accountable institutions, businesses are afraid, and they're definitely moving towards compliance. But there are a few other action items that I think, as you rightly pointed out, that the FATF is wanting to see that South Africa gets right by June 2025, and that would be a milestone for South Africa, and that would help us get off the grey list. So that is the need for South Africa to continuously demonstrate its resolve to increase investigations in and around money laundering and terror financing. And then not only investigate, but prosecute these complex money laundering schemes as well, you know, and then report them to the FIC as quickly as possible. So once that is accomplished and they can demonstrate that they have a sustained effort, we would be moving much closer to clearing off the grey list by October.
I take your point. And so, I mean, we might miss the immediate deadline, but the short answer is that we have made huge progress. We're doing the hard work on the few remaining points. We're going to get off that list probably sooner rather than later. This isn't something which you and I are going to be, you know, 2 years down the line. We touch lots of wood. Still talking about. The government really has been taking this and moving it forward.
Absolutely, and I think the government has made tremendous strides in educating the business sector. There are constant webinars in terms of how to implement the FATF guidelines within business in South Africa. There is, you know, so much effort and drive through the FSCA as well as the FIC, ensuring that there's sufficient education materials, there's sufficient engagement with business sector. Obviously, you know, the government solely isn't responsible for getting us off the grey list. It's companies and large enterprises that have to abide by these regulations, you know, and, you know, implement these stringent regulations in their companies to assist in the process of getting off the grey list. Hence the stick method which the FSCA has applied and fined these companies. So there's more than just government engaging. I think the whole private sector is on board. There are companies that are still yet to comply, but I think they're starting to understand their role as an accountable institution. You know, more and more companies are starting to realize that they have to comply even when it didn't really apply to them. You know, there's a high value goods clause in the FIC, which is quite broad. And, you know, when you start to understand what high value goods are, it's not just jewelry, it's not just fancy vehicles or anything like that. It's across all sectors. It could be an engineering product that you are supplying, and, you know, its value is in excess of 100,000. That would require you to now do all of these compliance policies on that business that you're supplying it to. So it's a much more in-depth process of understanding it. And then there's another layer to it as well. Certain financial institutions like banks would also have to make sure that their customers are abiding by these rules as well. So you might not just get an inspection from the FSCA, you may get one from your bank as well. They'll descend on your office with a team of regulatory experts, and they will assess to see if you are implementing the policies to cover their risk of having you as a customer.
I take your point in that. It's beyond just sort of regulator. It is across the economy, and that is very much what the plan has been is make it completely all encompassing. We'll leave it there. That's Frank Leonetti. He is CEO of GlowRep. Appreciate the early morning, and that's our poll today. LinkedIn and Twitter. Can we get off the list by this year? I think we probably can. I mean, we will get off sooner or later, but of course, sooner is always better. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. We're chatting with Nick Kunze yesterday as markets were looking for another bout of strong selling. We asked if you've been buying or selling during this tariff-induced sell-off. Over half said, no, you've just been watching in horror. A third said, buying stuff is cheap. The rest said, selling all the way. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole Tolani, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. ETF tracking errors.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.